Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we're joined by Richard St. Jean, the Chief Operating Officer for the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa, explaining how the renovations and expansion of his property has turned out. The GGB podcast is sponsored by IGT. Give your players what they came for with IGT's top performing themes featuring the biggest jackpots. IGT's wide area progressives draw a crowd on every floor. Visit IGT.com for more information. And I say, it's all right. Richard St. Jean is a veteran leader in the gaming industry. He's worked for Caesars Entertainment, Station Casinos, Penn National Gaming, and now is the Chief Operating Officer of the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa in California. He joined Morongo 2 years ago, just prior to the pandemic, and as the casino resort was being renovated. He explains how the casino emerged from the pandemic, how a satellite casino became permanent, and the demographics of his market. He spoke with me via Zoom from his offices in Morongo, joined by Simon Farmer, the property's executive director of marketing, in April. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Richard St. Jean, the general manager at the Morongo Casino in outside of Palm Springs. And we also have Simon Farmer, the executive director of marketing for the property. Guys, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having us, Roger.
Go back to the time when you joined the property, Richard. You arrived about halfway through the renovation process, was that right?
Yes, I got here, Roger. I got here in Q4 of 2019. So I'd say it was about 50%, maybe 60% completed. So the renovation of the existing casino space was materially underway, but we had a long ways to go in the large expansion that we were adding.
Did you have any influence in the design and the operations of the process there?
You know, in the main casino, I think the program was pretty much baked. But if we get into the expanded area, you know, keep in mind 65,000 square feet, we had lots of opportunities to really improve the connectivity, sight lines, circulation, expand some elements back there. But as far as the box itself, that remained pretty much the same.
Okay, great. So you got there right before COVID, huh? That must have been a little disappointing for you to do that.
Well, I came out of retirement after going on 2 years. I told my wife, I do not want to open a property. I've done enough of it. I didn't realize I was coming into, I knew I was coming into the renovation and expansion, which is, you know, I enjoy those projects. But then, you know, learning about COVID and that starting to percolate, that was, you know, opportunity number one. Then suddenly abruptly closing down, formulated a plan. We probably worked harder when we were down trying to formulate the plan for reopening. And then, if I remember correctly, we opened with about 5 days notice, and we're also first to market of the significant casinos in the LA area. So it was like New Year's every single day post opening.
I'll bet. And you got all your employees back, hopefully.
You know, we really didn't know, Roger, how robust business was going to be. So we hedged on maybe we'll be a little more conservative and, you know, continue to ramp up if necessary. And it was total opposite. We were just, we opened with about 1,700 team members. We could have had 2,500. And, you know, we had all decks on hand. We made it happen. But it certainly wasn't without a lot of pain.
I remember those days. It was very difficult to operate in those days, and with all the restrictions as well on top of just the normal operation. So, but you've done fine since then. Obviously, you know, the business has come back and it's booming.
We were thrilled with our overall performance for 2020. We were relatively flat, even after being closed for 2.5 months. Compared to 19. So we really closed the gap, and, you know, the team really just pulled off. As I tell them, they moved mountains and pulled off miracles. So it was a pretty strong way to end the year.
So explain how the resort has changed with the renovations, the new food and beverage outlets, and then larger casino.
You know, Ken Yusenko did an incredible job with the designs and really modernizing the studios, you know, well overdue. So that was one thing. And then it started with, I think, restaurants first, moved into the main casino. And then obviously they wanted to tie it in. So it looked, you know, it wasn't, you know, too different from the new expansion. So the renovation among itself, just the casino and the expansion, were spectacular. And then we had just a couple monsters bar, one being the Splash Bar in the expansion, the other being Crystal Hearts in the middle, the heart of the, I think prior to the renovation, it was largely enclosed. So much like some of the more properties now, it's a wide open space, lounge seating, beautiful bar, table games. So that really became the focal point. And then you augment that with Good Times Cafe, which is just kind of a modernist, you know, kind of cool, hip vibe feel for typical daily diners. Asian American Grill, which is a full service Asian offering that is, again, both contiguous to this area. So those were really some of the big ones. And then at the far end of the expansion, we started what was kind of an unmanned sidelines bar, and we decided to expand that shortly after opening and brought in Wahlburgers, and that relationship between our bar and their restaurant's been terrific.
How about the hotel rooms? I understand they were renovated as well.
We renovated the hotel rooms, the suites, the casinos, the cabanas. So really the entire property has a, you know, new feel, and then in conjunction with that, really starting to deploy technology. So that's coming along slower than I would have hoped. But, you know, beautiful TVs, the series, we'll have the electronic keys in place. So really, really catching up with properties that I think were definitely ahead of us.
I stayed in the suite when I was there one time, and the suites were beautiful even before that. And of course, the view is spectacular there.
We definitely capitalized on the view, and I'm very pleased with how the suites turned out. We've pivoted a few times relative to design because they're not large suites, but I think we landed right where we need to for our customers.
Right. So do you have a buffet?
We did. And I think this is probably one of our favorite stories for today. You know, our buffet was very dated. And then obviously with the onset of COVID, a lot of discussions about the buffets come back. And we had already been in concept discussions with a number of people on what this could look like going forward. And we looked at numerous iterations and what it could be, what it should be. And we started taking inspiration from places like Faneuil Hall in Boston, Food Life in Chicago, and Ferry Building in San Francisco. The list goes on. Station. We like that urban look and feel, still kind of modern, but, you know, transports you from Cabazon, California to literally any state or city around the country. But then our customers told us quite succinctly that they wanted a quality product at a reasonable price that was fairly quick. So this concept, well, it starts with the very entrance, something that resembles the Oyster Bar that you know at Palace Station, which a handful of us built 20 plus years ago and wildly successful. So we started with that inspiration out front, a la carte offering to attract people, get that smell, as I say, wafting into the casino. And then from there, it's a one price, you know, for the rest of the venue, for the marketplace. So we didn't want to get away from the current customer mentality about still wanting that buffet. But the difference is that at these multiple stations, it's tapas-style restaurant-quality food that we hand to you. Portion-controlled, but great quality. We have Chef Fabio here today, and Bissimo is executive chef, and they've been working on this menu for months. And I think that's what's really going to transport it from what was a typical buffet to something that's incredibly unique, and I think it's going to be very, very successful.
Sure. So Simon, Richard just mentioned the Asian restaurant. I know you've got a great Asian clientele there. How have they responded to the new restaurant?
Well, you know, Mozen is an operation that is run by a group called Drive This Entertainment, and we've been partners in Morongo with Drive This for many years.
Right.
They're based in Las Vegas. They've been good partners with us, and obviously when we were looking to remodel the space, to be very cognizant about what our guests, what our clientele continue to look for. And to your point, we're in an area in the Southern California market where nearly, and this is factual, nearly all zip codes within our region are within the top 10 to 20% in terms of Asian population
right.
in the entire country. That's obviously a very important important cultural touch point for us as far as the guests are concerned. And of course, we want to make sure that we have the amenities that will serve those guests. So we're obviously, you know, very, very invested in making sure that we take care of those needs. And Mosin has been an amenity that, you know, that we continue to work on. We're always looking at the recipe. We're always trying to you know, reinvent and make sure that we have the highest level of quality that they're asking for. Because the taste of that cultural clientele, you know, they aren't necessarily, you know, the same as you know, what you know, the average guest, you know, may sure. otherwise be looking for in a restaurant. And likewise, I think what you kind of touched on a point about the marketplace when it comes to speed of service and what kind of food that they're looking for. It's like, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, we have an amenity that's well balanced with a, you know, with both kind of quick serve capability as well as full service family style dining capability. And those are some of those elements that were built into Mosin to really cater to that guest.
How about, you know, a lot of people lump Asians into one group, but obviously there's a lot of subgroups. There's a Chinese, Vietnamese, Philippine. You know, how do you differentiate between each of those groups?
Well, we obviously have a big market to play in with all those groups incredibly well represented. Right. We cater to those guests in a number of different ways, through whether it's through, again, that food and beverage amenity, whether it's through our entertainment offerings that we've been working diligently to bring back online to help reintroduce those guests to the market, all the way to our hosting teams, where we have hosts that are of those nationalities that are ready to serve our Chinese clientele, our Korean clientele, and so on. We stay very much on top of the analytics for each of those groups to kind of see how they're acting and reacting to different things. And it's actually interesting, you know, looking at that clientele I mentioned, bringing things back online. When the pandemic really took hold, one of those things that we noticed pretty immediately was that the Asian clientele had a little bit more of a pronounced drop-off than the rest of Morongo's clients, right. Especially early on. I think we attribute a lot of that to, you know, what was happening, you know, what was happening in media, what was happening in terms of speculation on the origins of COVID, the communities from which it originated, you know, and we saw as a result, you know, our Asian play shift pretty considerably, and it stayed a little bit off pace relative to everything else coming back on track. Up until recently, when we've started to see that guests start to reintroduce themselves into the market, so we've been working to recognize that. We've been working to reach back out. There's some business challenges there that are still lingering as a result of COVID. Entertainment, which I just mentioned, is a nice operative example of that. And you still don't have a lot of these acts from overseas that traveling to the United States. Sure. So the offerings there are limited. We just need to make sure that through other mechanisms, like we've been doing, for example, through our database and database marketing, that we're reaching after that guest still in different ways in order to get them back into Morongo.
Right. Okay, great. Nonstop thrills meet massive jackpots. IGT's wide area progressives draw a crowd on every floor with the well-known brands like Wheel of Fortune slots and Megabucks. IGT's newest game, Money Mania, is based off player favorites Cleopatra and Pharaoh's Fortune. Money Mania brings the excitement with a fast-hitting wide-area progressive jackpot. Give your players what they came for with the top-performing themes featuring the biggest jackpots. Visit IGT.com for more details. So, Richard, you just announced yesterday a new poker room and a new bingo room at the old, the original casino, now called Casino Morongo. Tell us about what those are going to bring to your property.
Well, Roger, when that property was opened, as we began construction originally, it was with a pure intent of supply and demand for construction disruption. And the place did better than we expected. Mm-hmm. And we kept it open, particularly with the demand that we had post-opening COVID. So as a COO, I'm tasked with keeping projects in the pipeline, and we have a number of them, Marketplace being one, bringing in Wahlburgers, a couple new food court tenants. But, you know, there was consideration back years ago about putting bingo and poker back there.
Right.
Frees up a key spot that we were using temporarily here. So we jumped in with both feet, and we came up with a design, the right size program, and it's really created a full service property. It was just packed yesterday, packed again today.
Right.
You've got a nice, it's got a smoking element to the casino, not in the other areas, but non-smoking,
mm-hmm.
great little bar, a great great cafe style restaurant, and a brand new bingo poker. We're looking at RV parking. We have a pretty good amount of truck parking. So it really, if you take Wild Wild West in Las Vegas and fast forward that several years, it's becoming a full service complimentary property that's really intended for a different clientele.
You got a lot of people in that property during the construction. Have they stayed there, these people that are like that property?
We do a good job of segregating and really keeping it away from the guests. And there was a large building, if you will, which the original casino on the backside of the existing operating casino. So we just encroached on that space. So it was really a pretty short-term duration build, but again, looks like a brand new facility. So we are really, really excited about the potential that has. And I think too that our tribal members and elders, they love playing there. They grew up there to a degree. So I heard they're back in hordes today. So that I think that was almost creating that amenity that I think takes them back to some of the roots as well.
So how about, you're located across the street from a outlet mall. Does that being adjacent to shopping like that, does that attract customers to you?
Absolutely. I think it gives them one more reason to come to Cabazon. We'll get one of the couples gambling while the other one's shopping. We've really just gotten into, in the last year or so, doing boutique benefits for our players.
Right.
And actually opening the stores after hours and doing shopping parties, and they have gone over wildly successfully. So it's now given us just now the other shops that weren't really necessarily involved are really seeing the true value to cross brand with Morongo. So I think we've made tremendous progress there in the last year and a half.
So, competition in Southern California is really fierce. I ran into a GM from another Palm Springs property who was just beaming about his new addition to the property. So they're all adding amenities and things like that. So what does it take to be successful in that region?
Well, I think the properties in Palm Springs really cater to that region. Or so that we would. We have some penetration there, but not the volumes that they have at their three properties. Mm-hmm. We really look at our market as being us, San Manuel, and Pechanga, kind of owning that LA market. And I think we all play nice in the sandbox.
Yeah.
It's not hard for someone to just crush you with some free slot play. And, all three of us are doing very, very well. So to start creating that internal inflation and doing what other properties years ago used to do, and just before you do it, it's just costing you more money to do the same business. So our peers within California, there are upwards of 20 plus of us that have been communicating since before COVID, trading best practices and so on and so forth. So really just understanding where everybody is and kind of play nice in the sandbox, I think we all win.
Well, your property is located immediately off of the interstate, whereas some of the others, I know, Pechanga and Morongo, I mean, in San Manuel, what do they call it? Yamava now, right? You have to drive a little bit off the interstate to get there. But so that give you an advantage that, boom, you get in off the exit and you're in the casino.
Absolutely. And, of course, we have a new travel center we just opened up several months ago. So now I've got two. And, that creates good connectivity to our small casino. So there's no doubt that access, I believe it's $145,000 or 145,000 cars a
roughly,
which is just a huge number, and especially with periods where we know we'll see the backup, whether it's going to the desert on Friday or coming back on Sunday, we think we get some ancillary people that just don't want to sit in their car for 3 or 4 hours. Definitely benefit from the location.
If I may add, the just having that recognizability is a huge piece for us. Because going back to the last question about how we stay competitive, And as much as we love our location off the 10 freeway, we love this central location between Los Angeles and Palm Springs, it was important for us as operators to remember that while we have access to those markets, we aren't necessarily in those markets.
Right.
So being able to maintain, and we do this through the media, we do these through the mailbox, being able to really maintain that recognition is incredibly important to us, because we compete a lot here on experience. As all else, what we try to build and establish and develop for our guests, because we want to be synonymous, just like our campaign say, with a good time. The category we exist in, above and beyond just slots, tables, casino, what have you. We want these markets to know that if they're looking to have some fun, they're looking to break out of the troubles of life, if you will, and it was a place to go, the place that they've seen driving by the freeway, then that's the place they want to go.
So do you get most of your clientele from the West? Driving?
Yes. Without a doubt. And the better part of 96% of our business actually comes from the West.
Okay. That makes sense. So about your meetings and conventions business, as I said, we held a conference there a few years ago, and it was a great space. Is that coming back now as well?
Slowly but surely, and I'll tell you why. A, we don't have a lot of rooms. We have 310 rooms, but the booking window here that used to be a day to two or three out is now 2 weeks, because whether people are going to Las Vegas or other destinations, the cost of gas, all of these different things, we're full all the time. So it's very hard to just grab that big block of rooms. We are looking at, having more rooms, as much as I can tell you at this point, but that's definitely ways down the road. But I expect those patterns to change in time. But right now, we're just full all the time. Trying to lose it with a convention. Guests could be challenging.
So there's a referendum coming up later this year on sports betting in California, limiting it to the tribes and I guess the racetracks as well. Do you have an area designated in your casino for that sports book if indeed it goes through?
Yeah, Roger, there's a ton of chatter about these measures, which direction they can go, brick and mortar, online. We have identified a space that we think is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons it prompted us to move our poker room and kind of plan for this when it comes to fruition. Now, with a number of competing measures, it could blow up simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Deal it back in Prop 5 and other things. So we have a space ready to go. And if it doesn't come to fruition this year, I'm sure find something to do with it temporarily.
So are you talking to some potential sports betting partners in terms of, if mobile goes through, obviously you need more technology there?
I'd say that's really for the powers to be. They're really talking about how much of that wants to be controlled in-state versus out-of-state. So that's a tricky one to answer.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Robert Smith, who's a legend in tribal gaming, one of the original pioneers in tribal gaming, recently retired as chairman of the tribe. Who was elected to succeed him, and what has your relationship been with him so far?
So Chairman Robert Martin retired. Super guy. Charismatic, smart, love to motivate, just a super guy. So he opted to retire, and Charles Martin, different family, ran for tribal council, very forward thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking, he's one giving the COO lots of autonomy to bring projects to the table for consideration. Obviously, I'm not the owner to make the final decision.
Right.
CapEx, but his sister, Jeff Martin, is also our assistant general manager. So we've really got a good collaborative team of leaders that can, we do the due diligence, we run the potential performers and ROIs, and I think collectively we say, hey, this is a good accretive amenity for the property, and there's been a little more of that movement, I think, in the time since the election. So I think you're going to see some good things coming down the pike.
Sure, and I'm good friends with James Siva, your vice chairman, who's a great guy as well.
He's right in the middle of it. He has all the really hard questions.
Yeah, so you there's some great leadership there. I'm always interested in the second generation of leaders in tribal gaming, that they seem to be really plugged in and a little bit more professional than the original guys.
What I would say is it's so humble because they're doing it for all the right reasons. This has been passed on to this current generation. and they really want to perpetuate it, diversify it, so it's ready for the next. And the people you see getting involved on tribal council, the members, they definitely have this common core value of how are we going to perpetuate this. And that's been really, really impressive to watch.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we just completed putting together our Tribal Government Gaming Magazine, our annual report on tribal gaming. And, you know, we had a couple of stories on the 35th anniversary of the Cabazon decision before the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, it could also be called the Morongo decision because the Morongo tribe was also involved in that suit at the Supreme Court. How important is that historical perspective to the tribe when becoming a leader in the tribal gaming area?
You know, well, I think that was the pinnacle. It's what launched gaming, you know, back 30 years ago. But to get up to the, you know, Supreme Court and to win, I think for the tribal members, elders, and even some people on our council to this day that were very instrumental, they take tremendous pride in pulling that off. I mean, it's we see what happens in all of the feat unto itself. So I think it's not only something they carry with them, but I think their future generations will help that same story.
Sure. All of Indian country, I think, recognizes their leadership here. So that must be an important part of their image, certainly, in the tribal gaming community.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. And congratulations on finishing the renovations and opening the new poker room and bingo hall. I mean, things are happening there, and I can't wait to hear your announcement about the new hotel rooms at some point.
Well, lots of moving parts, but we welcome you down. You don't live far, so I'd like to come and take a visit. We'd love to host you.
Oh, great. Next time we come down, we'll definitely do that. So thanks for the time, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Roger.
Sun, 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 here it comes.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast with thanks again to IGT. Give your players what they came for with IGT's top performing themes featuring the biggest jackpots. IGT's wide area progressives draw a crowd on every floor. Visit IGT.com for more information. To learn more about tribal gaming in California and beyond, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.
It's all right. Comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun. It's all right. It's all right.